It's Friday night, you better get off your phone. It's time for Podcast Joy. Unscrewed Podcast.
That was so much better the time before.
Oh, what was it the time before? I can't remember. Fucking Gav. Fucking ruining the party for everyone. What was it? It's Friday night. It's time.
It wasn't that.
Oh. It's Friday.
I'm not going to attempt to do it because I can't sing and you can't.
It's Friday night. It's time for podcast delight. It's time to hang up your clothes. Take off your nose. Welcome to the Unscrewed Podcast, episode 7. We had a bit of a technical malfunction, so we had this brilliant intro that was like so spontaneous and so... And then our technician fucked it up.
Yeah, Gav, pulled the plug, basically, on episode 7.
Why couldn't you have done that on episode 5?
Yeah, you should have pulled the plug on episode 5, Gav. Come on.
God, yeah, episode 5 was our low point.
Yeah,
not quite our rock bottom.
Yeah, we're sorry about that, guys. It's really bad.
But it's a learning curve.
Oh, Ellie remembered something that she said before Gav pulled the plug.
Yes.
It was a learning curve.
This whole thing is a learning curve, and I'm learning that not planning is a strong point for me.
Yes.
And salty rhymes, improvisational, you know, jigs are my thing.
Planning works for me.
Yes.
Because on episode 5, you did all the planning and I did 0.
Exactly.
And it was a fucking disaster.
Exactly. So thanks for sticking with us if you have, or if you skip through that, we don't.
Hopefully we still have listeners after episode 5.
If you've just joined us, this is the Unscrewed Podcast, where we talk everything to do with life with an addict, whether that's drinking, smoking, drugs, growing up with someone, having a partner, or it's about addiction as well. There's all a mix and match in here.
Yeah, it's mainly based around like the... families, friends, carers, partners of alcoholics, addicts. Yeah.
And why might we make such a podcast? Knock, knock. Who's there? The Unscrewed Podcast. Why?
For people like us.
Hey, there we go. Check in.
Oh, thanks. Do I get a tick? Do I get a point?
Gold star.
Thank you.
No, this podcast is, if you don't know, if you've just joined us, it's... Lisa's mum is a recovering alcoholic.
Yes.
Been an alcoholic for a couple of decades.
22 years.
Yeah. And
but she's nearly made a year sober now, which is amazing.
Remarkable coincidence with the timing of this podcast as well. The way it starts, it's like pretty... Yeah. And I have got loads of friends and family who are either addicts or have had addiction in their lives. And it's affected them, and that's why we decided to do this podcast. So,
I'm one of those people because Ellie is technically my sister-in-law.
Technically, there's no ring. Technically, on it. There's no ring on it yet. So
you say, yeah, you don't want to get married. So.
I know. I just sometimes I think it would be good, but I just don't have it. I don't know why. I'm terrified of marriage. No, I don't know why. I mean, why do you think
you
I'm
do
not,
know why?
I
Come
don't
on.
Know why. My therapist says I might have problems with commitment.
Let's just make episode 7 about this.
Commitment. I mean, I love going to people's weddings, don't get me wrong. And it's your 6-year anniversary.
Tomorrow, this weekend.
Is. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah.
I know.
Cheers to that.
I made it 6 years.
Woo!
Thanks.
I mean, you haven't argued once in 6 years.
No.
It's amazing.
We're perfect.
Yeah.
See, why wouldn't you want to get married?
I know. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I listened to this podcast. She's called Esther Perel. She does a podcast. It's a couples counselling podcast.
Okay.
And it's called Where Should We Begin? And it's really great if you're interested in therapy or anything. But
why do you and my brother need couples counselling? Is that what you're trying to
tell
me?
Oh, yeah. We've had that loads of times. But what one thing she said, she had an interview and... she said, "What?" This woman was asking her about it, and she said, "Why do you get so many couples who are married who need support, who need counselling? Like, what?" And she was like, "I have no idea why so many people still get married.
Really?
Because there is no product. If you know 50% of the time this product fails, you would not buy it.
I did.
Ta-ching."
I did. Yeah, happy 6-year anniversary to me tomorrow.
Woo! Exactly, but it's true. And she was saying like how marriage is to do with like the idea of like coming together, a family of friends, like a social aspect. It's like,
yeah.
Because we don't have like, we're not religious anymore, really. We don't have communities. It's not like we all come together to celebrate. So when there's an opportunity to come together, it's like people really love it. But like, it's just really fascinating how...
It's interesting though, because before I met Joe, I never wanted to get married.
Really?
Mm-mm. Well, my parents, I was going to say my parents are divorced. They're not, which is really weird.
What?
Yeah.
No, actually, fuck, because they got married in what, 80?
I think they were married for 15 years and they split up when I was 11. And it's now 22 years later and they're still married.
Still going strong.
Because that makes sense. Separated. Both have had different partners. But yeah, so I never wanted to get married because obviously my parents' marriage failed. So I never wanted to get married. But then I met Joe and then I did want to get married.
Aww.
All soppy.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Hello.
So, yeah. But so I don't know. I'm still on the old fence about it. I don't know.
You do you, boo.
Thank you. Yeah. You do you, boo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've forgotten what we were talking about. Oh, yeah, that's it.
Oh, we're doing a podcast?
That's it, yeah. We know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's about. So we should just crack down to it.
So yeah. Go on, Elle.
So I was looking through different podcasts this week. And I found one called Since Right Now.
Okay.
And it's two guys, Chris, Jeff and Matt, but they often, there's only two of them at any one time, like, hosting it.
Right.
And basically they talk about everything and anything related to recovery.
Mm.
So they're all recovering addicts.
The hosts are?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
They all are, yeah. They're all, they're in, like, their 40s, I think. And it's called Since Right Now, Addiction Recovery Podcast. And it's just, there's loads of different chats every week. Sometimes they talk about their own experience. Sometimes they talk about mental health, recovery. And I was listening through some of their episodes and it's just interesting. I don't know why, because it's outside of the perspective of someone who is the alcoholic.
But right.
This whole concept of sobriety, what it means to be sober, what it is to be an alcoholic, why you're an addict, those kind of things I think really affect us as outsiders as well. And also they're signposts for, because you know when you're like looking after someone and you're afraid that you're becoming an addict, we all know that you're like three times more likely to become an addict if you grow up with a, you know, an alcoholic parent or a depressed parent or whatever, you're more likely to have that as well. So they did this interview with someone called Lisa Smith, who wrote,
not me.
No. So Lisa Smith has published this memoir on sobriety and it's called A Girl Walks Out of a Bar.
Right.
And it's, I've been listening to the Audible, sponsored by Audible, so Audible podcast. So okay. It's like the Audible, ebook. So like the, whatever, the, what's it called?
An audiobook.
That's the one. So, and she basically charters her, the start of it goes through when she decided the day to go into recovery and she's a very successful lawyer in her late 30s. And why I liked it is because she talks a lot about how her upbringing affected her becoming an alcoholic.
All right.
So she had all these issues with self-confidence. She was a fat kid. She overate. So she began to have an addiction to like overeating and finding comfort in that. And then her parents were sort of semi-alcoholic, grew up in a very sociable 70s household.
Right.
So there was the 70s parties. They had like this sort of new technology that everyone came there to see and like have a go on their fondue set. And it was a very, and she like made drinks for everyone. So drinking for her became like a really like normal thing.
Yeah.
And she noticed that parents and adults got happier and more loose and like joyful as they went through. But her granddad was an alcoholic, which she'd heard and she knew it was like a bad thing. She didn't really know what it was. So she charters like her life through growing up.
Oh, right.
Having very, like, what we would say was stable, good parents. But just how she became an alcoholic. So I thought it was useful because, A, you can listen to it as an outsider.
Yeah.
So if you're not, say, as, like, myself, so, like, one of my very close friends had a mother who's an alcoholic. So it's really useful to just understand what that life is like if you're from that perspective. But also just to hear how someone can become an alcoholic. How, because sometimes it's not always black and white. Like, it's not always, like, I was brought up in an abusive household or I was fed drugs from the age of no, whatever. So
many different.
Yeah, topics. And there's loads of different ways, and sometimes that can really help to understand or connect with someone if you can understand where they're coming from. So
yeah, was she a lawyer when she became an alcoholic, or was that after recovery?
She talks about she realized because she grew up in I think it's New Jersey, so she's like Italian, American Italian. Uh-huh. So food and alcohol were like always in abundance.
Yeah.
And she realized she went to Northwestern, so like one of the top 10 American colleges, they call them, don't they? And she realized then maybe she was drinking in a way that was, so when she was like 18,
right,
that was not standard. So things like she was saying a really interesting thing about how she would go, you know, if you'd like got a party and you're going to go to a party in the night,
yeah,
she'd be getting ready and she'd be like, well, I need to start the party now. So she'd have a beer and like to the point of I'd take a beer in the shower with me.
Oh.
So she could, you know, like start drinking.
Yeah.
But she was still functioning. She got like a first. She managed to like leave and she went on to Rutgers to do her like master's and becoming a lawyer. So she became this really high-end lawyer, high-functioning adult, but she became addicted to cocaine as well.
Right.
And by the point she got to 38, she literally could not get out of bed with...
It's interesting though, because a lot of, especially with women.
Yeah.
From things that I've read, heard, seen in documentaries, there's like a rising of women professionals who become alcoholics, mm-hmm. because like the high pressured lifestyle that they're living, and then they come home from work and it's like, oh, I'll have a glass of wine, and then that glass of wine then turns into a bottle of wine a night, or then it might turn into two bottles of wine on a Tuesday night, mm. and it just grows and grows and grows from that. So that's like
a
newish sort of trend.
Yeah.
That's happening, yeah.
Well, she talked about as well about how she learned through food, not through alcohol, when she was a kid, which we sort of talked about lying. So she found it very easy. She learned to lie really on.
Right.
How she would like sneak food or steal food or, you know, that kind of thing. So for her, like, she had a really close network of friends the day she called to say she was going to go into, like, a detox centre.
Right.
She told her parents and everything, and they literally had no idea. No idea.
Wow.
And she was, you know, and she described it as trying to wake up the first day of her detox. She said it was like, I could not lift my head. It was like a lollipop stick trying to hold a bowling ball.
Oh, God.
She said, like, it was, which I thought was an amazing way to describe it. She was like, that was how bad the detox was at the start. But, and she managed to carry that for like 20 years and nobody knew. And she didn't tell anyone. So it's like this repetitive cycle. I was thinking of like how the alcoholic doesn't, and that's what then obviously they teach those people around who are like, if she ever had children or like. Cause...
So she tried to get. Have you finished this, by the way, or are you still?
I'm about 3/4 of the way through.
I was just wondering, was this like her first attempt at getting sober, or has she tried previously?
No, she's had a couple of attempts.
Okay.
But it's called Girl Walks Out of a Bar.
Okay.
So it's a book, a memoir, or you can get it on Audible on the audiobook. But it's just, she's really dry. She's really funny. She talks very candidly and honestly. And I just found it really refreshing. I don't know, I really liked it. And the way she spoke on this podcast, just, she's totally got a sense of, I don't know, her
so
own.
So we'd like get on with her?
I definitely think we would go for a...
But we couldn't hang out with her because we drink too much.
Well, that was one of the things she said was like, which I totally... Because I'm like a borderline, sometimes alcoholic, and I think it was one of those things she said about she was sat there and her best mates, she was drinking, she just the day she decided she was first going to check herself in.
Oh, right.
She had, obviously she had a couple of glasses of wine,
mm-hmm.
and then she said she'd brushed her teeth like 6 times, had like swallowed Listerine, like done all her normal stuff, and left to go to work, and then she was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die, because she was like puking up blood and shit and blood and everything.
Yeah.
And that was the day she said, so when she called her friends, because her family weren't based in New York, so she called like her urban family, her friends. And they all came round and they were all like just drinking with her at like 11 o'clock in the morning. So they were all big drinkers. And she was sat there and she started to like reminisce about like how they became friends and how they drink and how they socialise. And she was like, oh my God, am I going to have to be sat here in like 2 months' time if I get sober and I can't drink with them? Am I just going to have to watch them drinking?
Mm.
She was like, I would rather die. Like, that concept of herself, she couldn't let it go, that idea. And it's like a really pertinent one because you get this, she was just like, how will these people be my friends anymore?
Yeah.
How will I socialize anymore? How will I be myself? So she talks all about like letting go of who you think you have to be and like realizing that you don't have to stay in one place. And,
yeah.
So it's a really fascinating book. I need to listen to the rest of it, but yeah, I really recommend it. Girl Walks Out of a Bar. So have a listen if you want on Audible or purchase it. And it's Lisa F. Smith. And also if you want to check out the podcast that I found it from originally, then have a look at that as well. So that was my little tidbit that I found this week.
It's quite good, actually. I'm definitely going to read that book.
There's loads out there about sobriety at the moment, especially like, I don't know whether it's a more millennial thing or not, but it seems to be like less people drink now than when we were like 19, 18.
Oh, it's piss, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the clubs.
We were all pissed.
I don't know.
And she talks about it, about like how it's an absolute form of escape. It's an absolute form of like expression, like being able to be pissed is a comfort zone.
I don't know. I mean, I think when you're 18, 19, that's when you sort of legally can drink, well, here in the UK.
So, I mean, that didn't stop us when we were 40.
No, I'm not saying it would, but... But then it was like a novelty of, right, I'm going to go to town and I'm going to go to Piccadilly 21s or whatever club it was at the time. You know what I mean?
They're not sponsoring us, by the way.
Because it's a great... It's like shut down years ago, Ellen. But it was like a fun thing to do with your friends. But I think it's a novelty of that you were of legal drinking age then. Yeah. So I don't...
But now it seems like millennials, they are far less interested in that. And I don't know whether that's because...
I don't know.
Well, that's what the impression I get from, like, what I've read and, like, my nieces and nephews and stuff. Like, they're far less interested in it. Like, I don't know whether it's education has
changed.
Maybe
it's just my family then, because, but like, the younger ones in my family are, like, out all the time.
It's true. So maybe it is. I don't know. Well, let us know if you've recognised a change from your familial pattern of you going out when you were 20, or your kids now are like, oh, alcohol's boring, I get a hangover, why would I want to get a hangover?
Sushi instead.
Yeah, exactly. Also, like, things like milkshake bars are really popular now, like, and ice cream bars and stuff, and they are.
Oh.
It's like a really big, I don't know, I'm interested in that shift, like, why? I don't know, it's an interesting, so let us know if, I don't know. To me, it was like, alcohol was like the thing you did, and you went out and got pissed. And it was like the thing.
Okay.
There didn't seem like there was another option of having a good time with your friends if it didn't involve alcohol.
You also lived in Wales, though.
True. But even after that.
So.
I mean, it was true. It was either like Smirnoff Ice or cocaine. So. Occasional weed as well, which was always knocking about. But yeah, so that was my little thing I found this week.
Cool. That's good.
So have a listen.
That was good non-planning.
Thank you.
Okay, so...
what have you got in your 25 binder page folder over here? Fucking colour-coordinated. Monica from Friends.
I have a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so basically I wanted to talk about fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Sounds light and fluffy.
Oh, it's so happy and light and not like... going to send you into depression at all,
mm-hmm.
but it is a massive thing that I think we need to sort of acknowledge.
Okay, so fetal
alcohol syndrome,
yeah.
Or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Okay.
So it's a syndrome, disease, disorder that happens to babies due to their mother drinking alcohol whilst they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So if you consume too much alcohol.
Yeah.
Then it can cause like massive defects. And I think what's it, because I know about this because of where I work and whatnot, and I've heard of it, but because obviously I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, my mum wasn't an alcoholic when she was pregnant with me, so I've never had to deal with anything like this.
Yeah.
But there's so many people out there dealing with medical problems because their mother was an alcoholic basically while they were pregnant. So,
is this just about alcohol or is this about drugs as well? Or
no, it can be drugs as well can cause neuro and behavioural effects to a fetus, but of all the substances of abuse, alcohol is by far the most serious.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's why this is fetal alcohol syndrome.
Right, okay.
So fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is the most common non-genetic cause of learning disability in the UK. Obviously, the condition is preventable by abstaining from alcohol during pregnancy.
Yeah.
And research suggests that more than 7,000 babies are born every year in the UK with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Wow.
So I got a lot of the information about FASD or FAS from the FASDnetwork.org website. So I'm just going to read some of the facts basically from their website. So some local authorities estimate that around 70% of the children needing adoptive families have drug/alcohol misuse in their background or have been exposed to this during pregnancy. And it costs an estimated £2.9 million per individual to raise a child with FASD across their lifespan.
Wow.
That's an insane amount of money. So it causes medical problems, and they can either be behavioural problems, physical problems. A lot of it is brain damage. So it can be attention problems or hyperactivity, academic problems, behavioural changes, social or relationship challenges, difficulty making or sustaining friendships, sensory impairments, which includes like visual hearing problems, poor regulation of emotion, tendency to be oppositional, difficulty with money, time and mass concepts, difficulty with transitions. There are a lot of problems created.
So are these just like, so say if, is it like if it was a baby born and then the minute that that baby was born was taken away from its mother?
Not necessarily.
Like, or are they related to, like, if you're also brought up with that initial upbringing of an alcoholic parent, say? So are they, is it purely related to like the physical side effects, or are they related also to like that first initial?
No, it's a medical cause from when the mother is pregnant with the child, which is why it's called fetal. So it's when they're in utero,
when they're born, like you can tell.
Well, some people don't find out until later on in life when they then get diagnosed.
Right.
It depends on whether the mum's been involved with social... Because sometimes social services will know about this sort of thing due to the mum's behaviour or things that happened in the past with previous children. Majority of the time, it's noticed straight away because the baby will go into withdrawal symptoms as soon as the baby's born.
Yeah, I've heard of that before, yeah.
But it depends on how bad the alcohol dependency was at the time that the mother was pregnant, and how much they're drinking at that time. It depends, every case is different, but usually it will cause withdrawal symptoms for the child.
Yeah,
it's not good. It's very, very sad. But interestingly, I found an article from online, on The Guardian Online, which was from April 2015. If you search FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome, on Google or any other search provider.
We're not sponsored by.
I might add. I think it comes up as like the fourth one down, this article in The Guardian. And the article features three different stories. And the first story is from a girl called Stella, who's an adult who's living with fetal alcohol syndrome. The second is Laura's story. And she was the cause of both her children having fetal alcohol syndrome. Mm. And then the third story is from a lady who adopted two children who have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Right.
So it's a really, really interesting read because you see it from all different perspectives. But what's also mentioned in the article is about a court case, which I thought was quite interesting. Mm. So at the end of 2014, there was this controversial British court case which hinged on whether a woman should be considered to be committing a crime if she drinks heavily during pregnancy. So the case looked at whether the council caring for this specific child, a seven-year-old girl who had fetal alcohol syndrome, was entitled to extract compensation.
What, from her mother?
Essentially. So lawyers examined the legal rights of an unborn child, and they were asked whether alcohol consumption by the mother constituted the crime of poisoning.
Whoa.
I know. However, the Court of Appeal ruled in December of that year that the mother, who inflicted lifelong damage on her child by consuming large quantities of alcohol while pregnant, had not committed a criminal offence, and that her daughter was not therefore entitled to compensation. And to date, no woman has been prosecuted under English law for harm she caused to her child in utero, but hundreds of women in the US have been imprisoned for drinking or taking drugs during pregnancy.
Right.
So this was from that court case was in 2014.
Right.
And I've looked at it since then to see if I could find anything, updates on that. And there's still no. There was nothing from that case.
So is that?
And nobody has been prosecuted for that in the UK since that I could find.
That 7 year old. She isn't with the. You said she's with.
No. She's like in. Like with like foster parents.
Does it say
or
what happened
parents
to her,
or
her?
She had very significant brain damage. Oh. So it says it actually says here that the
but can they prove?
We're not talking here about the effects of drinking a couple of glasses of wine at a friend's wedding. The test case involved a woman who drank, by her own account, half a bottle of vodka and several cans of strong lager daily throughout the pregnancy. So yeah, I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that, and whether you thought that mum should have been prosecuted, or whether it's too difficult to.
Well, I think it's not illegal. That's it.
No.
Even though it says in the bottom of the back of drinks and everything, it's not actually illegal to drink when you're pregnant.
No.
So the realistically, it's unfortunate, but there's no legal. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing you could do, is there? She's never going to win, unfortunately. I myself...
Yeah.
...would want to, you know, have someone take the blame for what's happened to me if it's fucked my life and I have no choice over it and it could have been different. For sure. But, you know, a law has to change, I guess, for it to become... So, yeah.
I think, did you just say I'd want someone to take the blame for, you know, because you've fucked my life?
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit more serious than...
Well, no, but I'm trying to whittle it down. That basically your entire life has been shaped and changed by the fact that your mother did not look after you and you were in utero. Is that what it's called?
Utero.
Utero. Neutro.
Neutro.
In neutral. That's what we call it in acting when we're just being, when we're not putting any affectations on our body. In neutro. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I obviously...
Yeah, but I mean, I think the laws need to change in this country because plenty of people have been prosecuted in the US for the exact same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's very, very sad.
Yep.
So there was another thing that I wanted to mention. There's a documentary called Sensitive Souls, which is available on Amazon, probably somewhere else as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a documentary about two Danish 21-year-olds who are both living with fetal alcohol syndrome. And they've both got
a documentary.
They've both got a wide range of medical problems. And so, yeah, it follows their lives and how they go on, like, day to day. Like, the both of them live in, assisted living because they can't live by themselves.
Yeah.
And one of them isn't able to work, can't read, can't write.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's a really, really emotional and sad documentary, but it's also really uplifting as well to see how... they're going through so much and they have to endure so much, but they're striving so hard to be independent. It's a really, really, really good documentary. So if you want to know more about fetal alcohol syndrome, then watch Sensitive Souls documentary on Amazon.
I will.
So, yeah.
Good shout. Good shout.
So, yeah, so that's fetal alcohol syndrome.
Well, thanks for bringing that to the table, because I would never have even considered that.
Yeah.
Was there anything particular that made you want to chat about that? Or was it that documentary, or was it...
No, I actually... Well, I work at a children's hospital, so I know about fetal alcohol syndrome anyway.
Oh, of course, right.
And I just felt that would be a good shout to talk about on the podcast. That was it. And then when in my research, I found that documentary on Amazon, so I was like, oh, yeah, I'll watch that.
When was that documentary out then? Is it like a... It must be a newish thing, I guess.
2015.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Look out for it. Thank you.
Yeah, so the next thing I want to talk about is our patron saints.
Oh,
Mr. Callum Best.
Oh, yeah. Patron saint of alcoholic children.
Yes, so Callum Best and Bianca Gascoigne.
Yeah.
Who is the daughter of Gazza.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with Gazza, he was a
Paul Gascoigne, famous footballer who is an alcoholic. And Callum Best is the son of another famous footballer called George Best, also an alcoholic.
The most famous British football player.
Yes. So Callum and Bianca, along with some other celebrities, are for NACOA. They're climbing Mont Blanc in the Alps, a sponsored trek in aid of NACOA to raise awareness.
And what's NACOA stand for?
National Association of Children of Alcoholics.
Yes. We covered them in episode one.
Thank you.
That was a while ago, but well done.
So basically they're doing this trek to raise awareness and raise funds for NACOA. So this is really, I'm quite saddened about this, but they're aiming to raise £20,000.
Wow.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But
for the charity.
For the charity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've checked their Just Giving page today.
Yeah.
And as of today, they've only raised £141 of the £20,000 target that they want to raise.
Wow.
There's only 8 people that have donated.
Okay. So they... Okay, and so people must not know about it then, must not.
I'm assuming so. I think Callum was actually on this morning as well, last week, promoting this.
Really? And that's...
Yeah. And that's all they've got. Okay, so they're actually doing the trek on the 7th of July. So that is not far away at all. They're aiming to raise £20,000. They've only raised £141. So after this episode, we are going to go onto their Just Giving page.
Yeah, we are.
And we are going to donate. And we encourage all of you guys to please donate as well. We'll advertise it on our Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. Because NACOA do absolutely fantastic work. And, yeah, they need help.
Wow, yeah. We have to push that.
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is we'll share a link on the social media.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll try and get it out there, but just try and spread the word. And even if you can just donate a quid.
Yeah, anything.
You know, if we've got all of our 500 listeners. That's 500 quid, you never know. But
reaching.
Yes, share it and donate. And yeah, that's a great shout, Lise. And we'll have a check back again in a few weeks and see how it's doing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, well done.
Cool. Should we do a boat tits?
Yes, let's do a word. Thank you for that as well. I liked it. I learned something. Okay, so every week, if this is your first week, we explore some of the themes that adult children of alcoholics, some of the likely things that affect your life or the way that they've shaped your personality growing up with an alcoholic. And it's based on a book by Janet Jerginja Wattiets. And every week we cover a different topic. So, what are you going to pick?
I'm going to pick number 7.
Oh, number 7. Adult children of alcoholics have difficulty with intimate relationships.
Okay.
I mean, we all know that's true about you, Lee.
It's so true. So true.
Okay, so Janet says, adult children want very much to have healthy, intimate relationships, and it is extraordinarily difficult for a number of reasons. The first and most obvious reason is that they have no frame of reference for a healthy, intimate relationship because they've never seen one. The only model they have is their parents, which you and I both know was not healthy.
I'm going to interject there.
Please, yes, yes.
That, no, my mum's relationship wasn't healthy.
Right.
Well, when I was before the age of 11, my parents, my mum and my dad, married, and I had a great childhood, fantastic life. They were good parents. They had a nice relationship. Then that broke down. That's when my mum became an alcoholic. And then her relationships from then on were, yeah, shit. But I also still had good examples of good relationships through, like, my dad and my stepmom and my grandparents. And I know, so, yeah, no, I don't.
So you don't feel like you've had difficulty with
No.
Intimacy? Well, I can definitely vouch for those who have. Because, as I've discussed before, I grew up with extremely erratic and unpredictable and volatile parents as an example for a relationship. But, yeah, so for me, yeah, I completely relate to that idea of, well, I've talked about it before, lying and your parents arguing. So
yeah.
What you understand as a relationship
is... probably... It will have, like, certain truths in that, and... Yeah, but I also had healthy examples of relationships. I wasn't just defined...
Good for you!
I didn't just see my mum and her boyfriend or whatever. I saw my dad and my stepmom and, like I said, my grandparents and stuff like that.
Yeah,
well.
So you had other outlets. So I suppose this is saying if you didn't have an alternative viewpoint...
Yeah, exactly.
Which, for example, I didn't.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that if you're married, you hate each other.
Yeah.
Assume that if you're in an intimate relationship with someone, it's not, the examples I had weren't particularly healthy.
Mm.
So I definitely struggled. I've been with the same guy for like over a decade and we've definitely had issues with that. 100%.
Mm.
Only in like recent years when I've like done all the fucking crap therapy work do I realise, oh, I have a problem with intimacy. I have a problem with trust. Like literally that bad.
No, I'm not saying no, you don't. I mean, I don't fucking know. Don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here and being like, oh, me and my husband's relationship is fucking perfect, because it isn't, because no relationship is perfect.
No, this is about intimacy though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But I genuinely don't think I've had a problem with that, based on being the child of an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I don't think that's affected me.
It does also say they also carry with them the experience of come close, go away, which I think we've sort of talked about before, the inconsistency of a loving parent-child relationship. They feel loved one day and rejected the next.
Hmm.
So the fear of being abandoned is a terrible fear they grow up with. If the fear isn't overwhelming, it certainly gets in the way, not knowing what it's like to have a consistent day-to-day, healthy, intimate relationship with another person makes building one painful and complicated.
Mm.
That's what Janet says. She says the push-pull approach avoidance, that I want you, go away. The colossal terror of being close, yet the desire and need for it is beautifully shown in a poem by John Gold. Shall I read it?
No.
Well, I mean, it's something that long.
No, yeah, go on then.
And it's... this. I'll read it. Fuck it, we can cut it if it's crap, but I quite liked it. It's called... Why do you come?
Okay.
It's because he licked it twice. Right, so it's called I Don't Want You, I Don't Need You. I don't want to see you, yet you keep coming back. I can't figure you out. A pretty girl like you should be able to find someone else. I reject you, and yet you keep returning. Everywhere I turn, you're there. You're just taking up too much of my time. Why do you come? Why don't you leave? You are good. What did you want with a guy like me? Love. Please come back. She's gone. It's about that, to me, that poem is like about that push-pull feeling of really wanting to to have someone and wanting love and wanting to be intimate with someone, but when they get too close, it terrifies the fuck out of you because you're just going to assume that in the next moment, they're going to tell you that they don't want you, that you're a bad person, that you're too needy or that you've done something wrong or that they don't like you. Because when you grow up with that environment, so I'm assuming it's relating it to if your parent's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, when they're sober, it's like you said, it's like your mum was two different people. So it's like when you're sober, it's like, you're amazing. Love you, you're great.
I think my age thing might come into it again, though. Like, when we spoke about this before, when we didn't think, I never thought about living with an alcoholic before the age of 11, because I didn't go through that. I mean, 11 isn't that old, don't get me wrong, but I was older growing up and whatnot. So if I'd have grown up from the age of 2 with an alcoholic, it may have had way more of an impact. I don't know.
But that's apparently a characteristic. So
yeah.
And I can see why. So, but it's a really, that chapter for me in the book, if you do go and have a read, it's got lots of personal stories about that exact experience. So really, there's like a couple in there of exactly that experience. Of,
well, I might read that chapter and then I might change my mind and be like, oh no, that's me.
Yeah. But hey, at least you can't have them all. There's 13.
No, that's true.
You've had at least a good half of them so far.
Probably. So,
but that's one I recognise, and I think that's probably for anyone who comes from happy parents. So I love my parents. They're great. Individually, together, not so much. So... thanks for listening to episode 7.
Thanks for listening, guys. Join us on Instagram at Unscrewed Podcast.
And send us in your personal stories, your experiences, your issues with intimate relationships so I don't feel like such a penguin because Lisa's left me alone. podcastunscrewed@gmail.com.
Yeah, on Twitter at Unscrewed Pod.
Which, where we'll be sharing the fundraising.
Yeah, we're going to share that on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. So that's the
Mont Blanc.
Okay,
it's white in French.
So yeah, we'll share that trek and their Just Giving page on there, so you can go and donate.
And please do. And otherwise, we look forward to hearing from you again. Hearing from you again, and we'll be back with you soon with episode number whatever the next one is. Have a good week. Have a fun life. Take care of yourself. Speak to you soon.
Bye. Bye.